had a thyroid disease where my eyes were bulging and I was cross-eyed. That's how I got into all this, because I regulated, quoted, I healed, i.e. re-regulated it through these somatic practices without any medication. And my eyes were like bulging 7 millimeters from my head, and I was permanently cross-eyed. And my left eye was looking at the ground. I was the guy that had to wear the eye patch. And you're like, how does that guy see when he's cross-eyed? Like, that was me. And all I needed to do was regulate my breath for about a year and a half. And then my endocrinologists and doctors didn't believe me. They're like, how did you do that? How did you do that? What happened? How did you do that? What doctor did you see? Where'd you get the surgery? I'm like, I didn't. I just breathed. And my body corrected itself. And the hyperpresence you get from that, you're good. Like, you're good.
All right, today's conversation was with Philip Attar. Philip describes himself as a subconscious conditioning expert, somatic life coach, and somatic meditation guide. And if you're interested in supporting the podcast, right before we start here, we've got one sponsor, and it's my book, 10 Secrets of Awakening, The Secrets to Understanding Consciousness, Life Transformation, and Self-Realization. Thanks for being with us here on today's episode. I hope you enjoy. And if you're interested in books and those topics interest you, check it out. Otherwise, let's get into it. So Phil, man, you got a lot of stuff going on. You know, you're combining different concepts that I don't usually see combined, like subconscious alchemy. Like if I'm looking at your profile right now, I'm seeing ancient esoteric wisdom with somatic breath. And I don't usually see people, I mean, those things do go together. Like we know that ancient cultures did study the breath. It's a massive thing.
Yeah.
But subconscious alchemy, like you have a lot of really good videos about, you know, for those that can see, you know, he's taking his, you're doing it on paper, you know, and you're writing things down and you're getting into different areas. So when you say subconscious alchemy, like I'm looking at part three, I am. I mean, that, I know there's a lot to it, but for someone who just wants to understand, like,
there's
what
six
is,
parts at least.
Right. So if you want to get into that, I'd love to hear about that, you know.
Man, like the reason, that's a very good question, by the way. So I always appreciated your observation of these realities, concepts. I don't even call them concepts, of these realities of the universe of our life. In my work, so I do work with people on a daily basis. So I am a coach. I do work with people one-on-one and in groups. I've been doing that for about 8 years. I have a very fulfilling, busy, full-time practice. And I'm deep in the human work, which means it's all subconscious conditioning. It's all patterns from childhood traumas that are holding people back from their truth, their purpose, living their a life of vitality, a life of health, a life of well-being, a life of healing, a life of power and consciousness and awakening. But in my work, it's beyond the awakening. It's like, how can we practically use these tools to for you to correct the challenges in your life, to not just live in abundance, but truly make more money and live how you want to live in this dimension, how to heal your love or your relationships, your marriage, how to actually overcome disease, physical, mental, energetic, emotional within you, working with all that emotional intelligence. So the reason I combine it is because I've recognized, like all of, you know, practitioners like me, that the core esoteric wisdoms were there to help us manifest the life we want. I kind of personally hate the word manifest. We'll get into that later. But like that,
I know, I saw.
we'll definitely dig into that. Language is important to me. But it's all about living your best life, manifesting your best life, living with health, vitality, consciousness. And then yes, in our world, I know in your page, in my page, let's talk about building up our DNA, our consciousness, our quote unquote ascension as a human race, as a human in humanity. So the reason I combine it, because I recognize that the subconscious mind is connected to the way we breathe. It is connected to the way we perceive ourselves. That is our connection and our portal to the universal wisdom and truths that then you could download when you're within the one, breathing in the one breath of life. That those are the codes they've been talking about in the Bible, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita, Buddhism, like all of it. They've been talking about those codes. And I'm kind of like taking all the little codes and being like, okay, this is how we use it now for you to actually, this is the how. We're not just reading about it, obsessing about it, that I know you and I love to do. We're both kind of awesome geeks like that. I know that's why I kind of loved your page. I'm like, that dude's like me. That's awesome. he's just more like, you're like, oh, this is just, this is it all. And I'm like, I just keep it behind closed doors a lot for my clients. But that's mm-hmm. it. So it's combining everything, the subconscious work, the alchemy, the alchemizing the energies inside of you to perceive yourself, working with the ancient wisdom and the codes to then utilize it in daily life. And yes, rebuild our power as in humanity. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I've studied a lot of different books, the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedas, the Upanishads, a lot of mm-hmm. Eastern traditions, as well as... You could say some of those are esoteric. I wouldn't say as much anymore because they're pretty much free information.
Yeah.
But most things are these days. So really, if we take a look at the word esoteric, it just means less known. More mm-hmm. like it's just in the past, it was selected kind of people, either selected by the people who had the knowledge or they did initiations. And, you know, there's that whole concept. Basically, not that many people knew about it. And for good reason. I've mentioned on many podcasts before that the reason why a lot of these texts are not well known is because of the Roman Catholic Church and certain religions that said you can't talk about them. So if, you know, if you did, it didn't end up well for you.
Yeah.
So that's why they kind of had to go underground. It wasn't that it needed to be a secret, but in order to keep that knowledge and wisdom alive of what I feel like is closer to the truth, they had to kind of go under. But now we're seeing a resurfacing, and I think that's part of, you know, what you're doing. So when you study these books, do you have any examples for us of books, the specific codes in books? Like, was there a certain verse in the Bible where you got a certain code from that kind of linked it? Because that's kind of what you were saying, right? That there's wisdom in each book. Is there any book or anything in particular where you're like, this is a code? If that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. That's a good question, too. There, number one, I haven't read too many books. It's interesting. A lot of people are like, oh my God, you're quoting this, you're quoting this, you're quoting this. And in my work, I've just consistently, because of my practice, because of my own traumas, I've had to dive into a lot of somatic energy, healing, meditation work myself. So you kind of dive into the codes and then you speak and someone's like, oh, that's from blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, sure. That's the universe. There are a few books, of course, the Kybalion that I know you've been talking a lot about. And which essentially are the seven of many, frankly, universal laws that have been written about even since the Emerald Tablets, which I'm sure, you know, I know you talk about as well. Both of those books contain a lot of the codes that we talk about that many religions have distilled from, whether or not they distilled from the books themselves, of course, or from those teachings that are even beyond when the Kybalion was written. But the Kybalion and the seven laws, when you look at those laws that I know most of your followers and people on this podcast, I'm sure, are familiar with.
Maybe not.
So we won't assume. When you look at those seven laws of vibration, rhythm, how everything in the universe is vibration, and quantum physics has already kind of proven this stuff. So vibration, rhythm, then you look at everything that's vibrating. You look at an atomic particle and everything, the corpuscle and everything, all the energetic particles within it that have a rhythm. That move in certain geometric patterns based on the frequencies that create either it's magnetism, right? They're like creating an energetic pull and a push. And all of that creates literally, like if you get into the geometry of it, quote unquote, sacred geometry, I can probably throw out so many things for people right now, like the Merkaba, like the geometry of the flower of life, that is all vibration and rhythm. And when you recognize the vibration and rhythm inside of it, you can then feel that there's polarity, which is another concept, right, of the seven laws. There's polarity that is literally the magnetic pull and push between you and me, his and her, hot and cold, high and low, jump and then move down, the devil, the de-evolution of you, and then the evolution of you, the ascension, right? When you work with these laws, that's how I work with my clients. We dive into a deep meditation and breath work, and I help them feel the truth of those laws. Where I don't even have to talk about it. And when you feel the truth of those laws, that's when you become the quote unquote sorcerer. You become the source seer because you see clearly the patterns of your life, of existence, of your marriage, of your triggers, of your like, you know, you're like, oh, what the hell is that? Well, you know, this little twitch thing. Oh, I do have a loud chihuahua, by the way.
It happens, man. My dog was just... crying in his sleep right there. So I get it. It's like, part of it.
So it's part of it. I know even in my silent sessions, I'm like, okay, keep breathing. But it's
that was a test.
That was a test, to digress. It's when you dive into those laws of like vibration, rhythm, polarity, how everything mind, everything is intelligence, and then you recognize that you are intelligence breathing. You have the push and pull. You have the motion forward and back. You have the polarities inside of you, and everything has a rhythm. How did I wake up this morning? That's a rhythm. How did I feel yesterday after a fight? That was a rhythm. How did I feel when I was triggered by someone on Instagram? There's a rhythm. You start to get closer to that. You see the rhythm in you, in culture, in the universe, in Pluto, in another dimension, in this conversation, and you see the rhythm in everything, and then you can practically use it for your life. So that's definitely one of the books. There's so many. I mean, it's like one quick one. Another one is like, Jesus was like, repent, and the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Repent. Repent to give to the senses, right? To repent. Pent back then also meant senses, five senses. Repent. Repent to give up your senses and give up your will. Surrender your will to God, and blessing will be provided to you. That was also in the Kabbalah. When you recognize this stuff, and what does it mean now? Give up your will. When I'm in a somatic meditation, or I guide my clients into a delta brain frequency, which is the lowest, like beta, alpha, theta, delta, and then jump to a gamma meditation, which is potentially possible in these, when you feel the oneness, I am guiding them to surrender their body and breath to the one breath of life, to quote unquote God. Surrender your will to God, and your blessing is provided. When you're that present with your life and you activate these stages of your awakening, and not even beyond the awakening, your presence, that is that state of being that I know you talk about as well, where you are being and you're magnetic. I don't need to want for anything. And there's another quote, I shall not want for anything, no desires. And everyone's like, but I need desires. I need to pay my bills. I need to pay my mortgage. I'm like, when you're in that state of being, you're magnetic. No manifestation needed. You're just literally creating your life. That's a natural code for you.
That's interesting.
That was because a lot,
you're good, man. No, we like the rants here on it. That's what this podcast is for. So we don't have to worry about that shit. So with manifestation, that's interesting because it's like creating your life from the field manifestation. It's interesting when we think about that word. And I know the word is skewed a lot of times. And we saw, you know, with this, the beginning, it got really popularized with books like The Secret and shows and movies, right? I don't know if it was a book. I think so. It was more of a movie at that point. And I think there was a lot of things hit on there and that was empowering to a certain level of consciousness. But I think that when you start to get deeper into this path and into what powers you have, I think we realize that it's not just about your thoughts. There's many other things that apply to creating your life. And I think that's what you're getting at when you say subconscious alchemy. So when we're talking about alchemy, for someone who doesn't know any history of alchemy or why you chose that word, what was the reasoning behind that for like what you do? Because I know you're particular on words. So if you're choosing alchemy, I'm assuming there's a reason, you know?
I'm very particular in words. Language is so, it's so important when we work with, not just speak of and learn from these principles. You know, abracadabra, right? Means as I speak, I create, in ancient Aramaic. Oh, my dog's hacking. Abracadabra, as I speak, I create. What we say is a culmination of not just the thought. It's as you and I were going back and forth and you hit it on one of your last posts. I was like, dude's got it. It's thought and feeling. And then I added embodiment. And you're like, yeah, that's thought and feeling. I'm like, yeah, it's all of it. It's like, and that was a great post you did. And really trying to make people understand your being is a vibration. It's a culmination of alchemizing, alchemical processes of frequencies and emotions that are mixing together in any now moment to create this experience. The intonation in my voice, you can tell if I'm either anxious or stable. You can tell if I'm confident or insecure. You can feel that in someone's presence. And all of that goes back to how they see themselves, what they think about themselves, what they think of the world, how the world thinks about them, and how that makes them feel. And then how they are inspired to act based on all those thoughts and feelings and chemical, biochemical emotions in their body and their brain and in their, and their glands. Like, we have 7 hormonal centers in the body, these 7 chakras. Those hormonal centers are aligned with different emotional states that then release certain chemicals or don't release them. It creates the balance or imbalance. When we can understand that that is the alchemy that these codes in the 18th century, even before that, 14th century, that's the way they spoke about these things, about alchemical processes. So I'm trying to get people back to understanding that this is like a potion. It's like all the magic movies, like, the shit's real, man. It's like you're watching like people moving the cauldron and putting one spell into it, and you're like, no, that's it. Like, it's like, and the pixie dust is your like energetic particles. You're the pixie dust. Are you going to wrap it with that love? When you can understand that that's alchemy, how am I speaking? What am I saying? Am I that present to even be aware, or am I a robot and I'm like unconscious and my subconscious conditioning from childhood, the patterns in my brain are running for me, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why I combine the subconscious with the alchemy.
Yeah, 100%. And if we literally, as you're talking, I'm like, let me see what are they saying the definition of alchemy is? If we look at it. And it's, I think alchemy in itself can be considered a philosophy. Mm-hmm. And so basically, for those that don't know, I mean, we don't. There's a bunch of different definitions, but it's kind of like you're the basis to me. And correct me if I'm wrong, but from what my understanding of alchemy is, that you're taking things that chemicals, in a physical sense, you're taking chemicals and you're creating another substance from it. You're alchemizing them together. You're transmuting them together. So, I think you know, there's people that have said, I think it was with the Anunnaki. This is one thing with the Anunnaki. They're looking for gold, and maybe gold can be only made in certain places. Maybe it's through alchemy of different things together. You can create gold. I don't know. That's speculation. But basically, that's what we're getting at here, is that if you take that concept of you mix two chemicals together, you can create gold. You're saying that we can mix our energy together in a way where we transmute maybe past experiences into one that's beneficial, and that actually is a physical thing. And then you, as a byproduct, become almost a different person in the sense of the way that you perceive things. And you're beyond the person, of course, but it's like your character itself changes. And maybe there might be changes that happen within the body as well. When it comes down to like the actual substance in the DNA. And I did a video on that where your DNA can wind and unwind based on your emotions. And if that's true, then I think we have a lot more control. And mm-hmm. I'm with you, man. I talked about mm-hmm. it at last podcast. I talked about it last podcast. I was watching Lord of the Rings, and I'm like,
yeah,
maybe this stuff is going on. You know, they're talking about literally alchemy. I don't know if did you watch Rings of Power?
No, I didn't. It is on the list though, but yeah.
Okay. Well, basically, there's alchemy in that. When you get to the part, I don't think this is a spoiler, but you get to the part where there's a tree, and there's the Morgoth, and then there's the elf, and then they're both on, there's a light and a dark side of the tree, and that what happens is they're like fighting over the tree, and they're both putting their energy into the tree, and then it created a power that seeped into the mountain. And that mountain is an ore. It's a physical ore. And I'm like, that's alchemy. That in itself is a code. That's what we're saying. And you can do that within yourself. Mm-hmm. That's what the code from that scene was, is that you can transmute the light and the dark into make a powerful substance within. And, you know, some people might even interpret that as the kundalini energy, mm-hmm. the life force energy that goes up the spine. So maybe that's an analogy for how we can raise that energy up just fascinating to see, because
it's not even an analogy. That is actually one way to do it. Totally. I do that with my clients. We work with those energies. That was such a great definition. You're a great researcher, by the way, man, I have to say. Touché.
Thanks, man.
No, like that's it. It's when you're getting into theta brainwave states. So again, if anyone's unfamiliar with brainwave, you're in a beta, like right now, Nick and I are in a beta. We're talking, we're active, we're cool. If we're a bit calmer, no, not that we're not calm. If we're just a bit more meditative and calm, reading a book, chill, we might be in a low beta, high alpha. You're in a mid alpha to low alpha. You're in a very chill meditative state, usually what most people get into. Theta is when you're in a deep meditative state. If you're in a deep meditative state, depending on your experience, the average mid 35-year-old, there's a lot of data depending. You know, usually after 20 minutes, that can be triggered in your brain, average. For obviously, if you're experienced, it could be minutes, it could be seconds, it doesn't matter. But I'm just saying for the average human, that's why people need to meditate longer, I say, but we can talk about that later as well. The alchemy that's happening in that theta state is your brain is actually now activating your body, the biological processes in your gut and your immune system, and it starts to heal the cells in your body, which is why they have theta healing now, which essentially is just any type of energy healing or meditation where you're allowing the body and the brain to get into a theta brainwave. You then go deeper into a delta. You're regenerating cells like no tomorrow. It's a deep state of not only sleep, but regeneration. You now go into a gamma, which I can take my clients into a gamma, which is a very, let's call it a high. It's over 40 to 80 hertz of a brainwave. It's above beta. It sounds like it would be crazier than beta, like you're stressed, but you're not. It is moving so fast. You are just so hyper aware and you're in the one. That state has been proven in your brain to create neurogenesis. Literally create brand new cells and pathways in the brain, not just regenerate pathways in the brain that have been like cobwebs. And, you know, like you had a bit of trauma, of course, and some frenetic dialogue is moving your life and you keep repeating a pattern. So those neural pathways are stronger. You start meditating to these deep theta, delta and gamma states. It starts to rewire them. That's the alchemy. Rewire them, quite literally creating a new body, like creating new cells, creating a new perception of yourself, a new perception to other people, a new way to act, a new way of embodiment. Your emotions are changing. Chemical processes are changing. Biochemical processes are changing. You may even be healing some types of immune disease, fibromyalgia, skin disease, emotional flare-ups, stress, anger, quite frankly, any type of trauma that may trigger a type of emotional response, you will begin to heal. There's the alchemical process, quite literally, when you work with these truths and realities of how to work with your body, breath. And again, these codes of the universe are there to show us our true power. Like the telomeres and the end of your DNA either grow or shrink in depending on your stress levels. So your life is either extended or you're shortening it. Like all of that is connected. Yeah, the telomeres. All of that's connected to your thoughts. If anyone Googles that and looks, it's like the little strands at the end of the DNA. Yeah. And all of that's connected to your thoughts, feelings, and emotions, and your entire state of being, which is why the popular word the last few years in our practice is embodiment. It's, are you embodying these energies within you, these truths? Are you embodying a state of presence so you can recode your DNA in the now moment and make a new decision? There's the alchemy.
And there it is, folks. Just do that.
That's it. That's why we've all done this, right? Been through many Instagram bios and, you know, working with different clients over the years, blah, blah, blah. And distilling it to what I have now, ancient wisdom distilled into a transformative breath, like somatic breath, a body breath. Frankly, all my work with my clients to change their life, that's it. They pay me thousands a month. It's ridiculous. To hold them accountable to essentially do that. And then I realized, you know what? You don't even need me. What if we just give you this track and you commit to doing it? And that's what I've done now. I've released it. I'm like, okay, do this. That's what any good practitioner really is empowering their clients to do. There's nothing else you really need to do. The alchemical process is inside of you. The kingdom of heaven is inside of you. So how do you access that?
With breath. Some people do it with plant medicine.
And your breath. And yeah. Plant medicine's amazing. I did a psilocybin journey a couple months ago, which frankly got me to here.
There it is. So what do you think the balance is? You think it's sometimes breath, sometimes we can use these teachers, as I've heard Graham Hancock call mm-hmm. them, or medicines to transform our awareness, and then we can supplement that with breath. I know there's a lot of people that will say you can do either path, like you're going to do either breath work, and you know there actually is certain cultures that are based upon just using the breath to get there. I think a lot of yoga in its traditions beyond mm-hmm. the Western kind of way distorted stuff before the asanas and all the gymnastics that people do now. Well, I'm talking
it's like a workout now. It's like a workout. Right. I'm glad I go to yoga.
Right. And at the beginning, I think that that was actually meant, and this is what I, from my source for this, if people are wondering, I'm actually good friends with the yoga couple. I don't know if you know who they are, but they're super popular in the, they started on TikTok like I did, and they transformed over into Instagram because at that time period, there was a good time period where if you started on TikTok, then you could basically get people over. And that's how I think people can smartly use TikTok. I think a good way to do that. But anyways, they've been an inspiration for much of what I do. My book that I wrote, I don't think I would have had it written if they hadn't guided me. They wrote their own book, The Inner Work, and they kind of forged that path, and she's just been an inspiration. And so I'll have her on the podcast at some point. And it's Matt and Ash, they're the yoga couple. So with Ash, I remember talking to her, and she was telling me that the yoga asanas, the way that people do asanas in the when I say gymnastics, I actually mean gymnastics. From my understanding of how that worked is that the basis of why people do so much stretching in the way that they do was actually because the British came over, or there was Europeans. Let's just call them Europeans. The Europeans came over into the Indian culture, and they brought their gymnastics to them. And they basically took their practice of yoga and they combined it with gymnastics for men's PE class, boys' PE classes for educational purposes. So from my understanding, the reason why we do that is because that's actually not yoga in the original yogic traditions. And if they did do stretching or these type of exercises or asanas, sometimes they're called, I think the origination of it was to be able to sit upright for long periods of time for meditation and for breathing. That's how it links around. That wasn't just a rant to go nowhere. It's for breathing. You know what I mean? And so I think yoga has a lot of it. There's a whole branch of what we can call Kundalini yoga that focuses on bringing the breath up. We've got people like Dr. Joe Dispenza who's showing the science of it, how to get the Kundalini up and how to use the breath. I think, you know, that's the first place where I really started to dive deep into breath was Dr. Joe. And he has his meditations where, you know, you bring the breath up and into the pineal gland. And I think it's absolutely fascinating. And you kind of see that your body is a controller universe game, that you're using it to bring it up, you know?
That's it. It is a control. Okay, it's that time of day. Hold on.
You're good, man. If you got to take a sec, I understand. Sometimes I just get excited, and
it's always this time actually between like 12 and 2. I always have to,
and probably because also you're in a new place, maybe they're feeling, you know. Feeling.
Yeah, it's always when I'm in a new place, it's hard with it.
Yeah,
so with the asanas, with the yogas. Challenge a lot of people have with these practices, number one, you're bang on, like these yogas, not all of it, but many of the principles were there to allow you to develop such proximity to your body physically,
yeah,
that then you have no choice but to be still in your breath. You have no choice but to be super present to your breath, because you're in some of these contortions, you're literally paying attention to like your kidneys, your abs.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like breathing and you're becoming so intimately connected. The challenge many Westerners and frankly the world has with yoga practice, again, it becomes an exercise. You need to do something. Like, let me have 30 minutes. Let me get my hour. Let me get my yoga, put my gear on, my fancy gear, and let me go walk and go to my yoga studio and make a thing out of it. And then I go on about my day and I'm stressed as shit, right? The breath work. Hey. It's going to be an interesting edit. The breath work. I'm speaking of is so hyper present. Like one of my the big practices I do, and I know Dispenza does. Frankly, this is just a human thing that should be done. The fact that we're even teaching is a bit insane. One of the tracks I give my clients is a 12-minute guided meditation somatic, but with eyes open while you're walking.
You said eyes open?
With your eyes open. So you're like, I'll guide you. You're sitting down. Your eyes are open. You're doing work. You're connecting somatically to your body with a long, slow, deep breath and feeling the tensions in your body. You're opening the door. You go for a walk. You do it again. Eventually, I tell my clients to listen to this track so much that then they don't need to listen to it. They know what to do. And they're just connecting to their body breath throughout their day. I found that to be far more, and even my clients and any practitioner like me, transformative than going to a yoga class. Because you need to, the point is one. Everyone's talking about one. Do we really know what that means? In a now moment, I am so connected to myself that I'm looking at the mic. I'm feeling Nick. I'm feeling myself. I'm feeling my breath. I'm feeling Nick's room. I'm feeling my room. I'm feeling the echo in this big new place I got in this new Airbnb. I'm feeling my chihuahua on my lap that's a bit nervous because she's like, this is a new house. I'm feeling the orange juice that's down my throat that I had just before this call. I'm feeling the flowers that are in front of me that actually smell quite beautiful, frankly. I'm feeling and intimately connected with this hyper-present moment. When you understand that and comprehend that and breathe into it and embody it, frankly, you won't need yoga. The yoga will be an extra benefit that'll just amplify you even more. And that's how I suggest people work with their body first. Because if you think you need to segregate time to watch Nick's podcast and listen to this and then gain some knowledge and do one of my meditations for 30 or 40 minutes and then go do a yoga class, you're segmenting your life, which is the problem. When you can understand embodiment is in any now moment to engage with that alchemy, your everything shifts. Your awareness of the universe gets meta. Your awareness of even, in Buddhism, like the flower and the flower, like the patterns in a sunflower, you look at it and you're like, whoa, I'm tripping out. I'm not even on mushrooms. You're like looking at the way a light switch is formed and you're thinking, wow, someone designed the curve in this light switch. It's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I'm present to the glass and this is a traditional design of a glass that someone took the time to figure out the geometry of. You have mathematicians, one of my favorite, and artists like Robert Edward Grant, I'm sure you're familiar with his work, and mathematicians and scientists and explorers and artists like him and others are just exploring Egypt, exploring the geometries and recognizing the relationship between our bodies. Leonardo da Vinci's drawings and paintings, what he was trying to convey so he wouldn't get, obviously executed at the time. How all of these codes are in humanity for you to understand. And when you witness it more clearly, the reason I speak slowly in a now moment while you take a long, slow, deep breath, even while you listen to me, release the tensions in your body. I even tell my clients, release the tension in micro parts of the body. That's so powerful. Like behind your ears, inside your mouth.
For me, it's eyebrows.
Your eyebrows. I love the eyebrows. I love behind my eyes. I had a thyroid disease where my eyes were bulging and I was cross-eyed. That's how I got into all this because I regulated, quoted, I healed, i.e. re-regulated it through these somatic practices without any medication. And my eyes were like bulging 7 millimeters from my head and I was permanently cross-eyed. And my left eye was looking at the ground. I was the guy that had to wear the eye patch. And you're like, how does that guy see when he's cross-eyed? Like, that was me. And all I needed to do was regulate my breath for about a year and a half. And then my endocrinologists and doctors didn't believe me. They're like, how did you do that? How did you do that? What happened? How'd you do that? What doctor did you see? Where'd you get the surgery? I'm like, I didn't. I just breathed. And my body corrected itself. And the hyper-presence you get from that, you're good. Like, you're good. Like, I want to do something? I go, do it. A trauma pattern isn't running me in a present moment. In a present moment, I'm like, this is my purpose. I am Philip. I'm speaking to Nick. I'm being me. Nick gives me a call. I'm like, Nick's awesome. Cool. Yeah, I'd love to. Let's do it. And we do it. That's it. I want to make money. I'm selling my meditation album. I get clients because they feel the truth in me. And that's it. Money's being deposited in my account as I speak. Do I do work for it? Sure. But it's not work. It's not effort. I'm just being. And there's a lot to dive into with that that can be misunderstood, but that's the essence of it.
Is there anything that you particularly want to hit on that you feel like might get misunderstood from that? Because I want to give you being, that space. You know,
being is misunderstood. Like presence of being, people think, okay, I'm present. I think society makes everything out like mindfulness to be so shallow. We don't really get it. It's like, okay, be mindful. Then what? Go about your day and not be mindful. Or even a state of being, people are like, well, how do I pay my bills, Phil, with a state of being? Here's how you pay your bills and you live your purpose when you are truly in a state of ultimate, when I say ultimate, within yourself, hyper-present being. I am so connected to myself and my body in this now moment that I have no choice but to express what is honest and true. I am not lying. That's why lying is a sin. Lying is a misstep in the Bible. I am so connected with myself that my trauma is not speaking for me. I'm not yelling at you. I'm not disturbed. I'm not lying to myself. I'm not lying to your followers. I'm just being me. And being me is this type of practitioner. Being me is being honest with how I grew up. And my dad was schizophrenic. He started reading me Nietzsche at 3-4 years old. And it's like, there's no wonder I went into this life of psychology and I was traumatized by that experience with my violent father, quite frankly, schizophrenic, like yelling, verbally abusing everyone in the room, traumatized by it, that then all I had to do was meditate for my life because I didn't know how to regulate my body and my anger. That code made me regulate my anger so much that I had to master it. And then people came to me like, how did you do that? Well, okay, here, this is what I did. Then it works. 1,500 clients later, you're like, oh shit, it's working. There you go. I am being me. And then I integrate myself, of course, into this capitalistic society, learn how to sell some stuff. And then I'm just being. Because you condense time. There's no time when you're present. You're like, I am potently being me. I do an action. I do it. The next thing follows. I magnetize the next thing. It's already conjuring the next lily pad. This is what the manifestation teachings got wrong. They're like thinking you need to attract it to you like you don't have it. And then you're in scarcity, lack, and anxiety. You're like, oh, I can't have it. I need to vision board it. I'm like, kind of, not really. Embody yourself now. You will naturally manifest a desire without having a desire. Another thing that's misunderstood. Well, how can I not have desires and obtain the life I want and buy the house and do all the things? You know, build the camper truck. Do whatever life you want.
Is it possible to not have desires? Do you think
it's
really possible?
I don't have desires.
You have zero desires.
Honestly. Zero. I'm so honest. It's so hard to describe even in words. There's nothing I shall want because I'm already who I am. And if that means I build a freaking $120,000 camper truck instead of buying a Porsche, that's me. That's me. You look at my truck, that's me. It's freaking sand colored like my clothing. You look at it, people are like, that's Phil's truck. It's like, so it's an extension of me.
This is interesting. I want to get into this. This distinction between desire and preference. Do you think that these two words are the same thing? Do you know what I mean?
You're good.
Because when you're talking about building a camper truck, would that be a desire or is that just a preference? Because it's like desire in itself, a lot of times we think desire is bad because it has in many ways been interpreted as I have an attachment if I have a desire. So that's why if we use this word preference, it's like I can just prefer that I do well in life in these areas. I prefer that I have a relationship, but I'm not attached to it. So would you say that in that sense, preference would be a thing that would kind of substitute for that word? Or what's your thoughts?
You're good. I love your observations. I'll say it's neither. It's an expression. And we're only semantics for the sake of really dissecting the codes. That's why I get kind of into the language, right? Because obviously we're all right. It is a desire. It is a preference. It is an expression. Yes. But let's zoom into it. In a hyper-present now, okay, number one, I'll caveat this. Can we have a desire? Of course we can. I wanted orange juice and I wanted a matcha latte this morning. I got it. Great. Awesome. I went to walk. I went to get at this awesome bakery. Cool. I got it. But did I have a preference or is it just an expression of me? In a now moment, I'm not trying to be philosophical here. This is what hyperpresence is and what they've been writing about. And people, it's hard to understand in a writing, in a book, unless you're actually experiencing it. To be desireless is not necessarily to not want anything. You will still want stuff. but I'm not wanting anything. I am just being me. That's desirelessness. And Philip will naturally get a matcha on certain days because he likes that kind of pep where it's not caffeine, it doesn't crash me down. And there's an expression in it. It is me. Some days I like my black coffee because I intermittent fast and that can hold me with a little butter in it. You know what I mean? Like that I forget what it's called. It sustains me till 12 or 1 till I work out and I'm cool. And that's Philip. Nick will be Nick. Nick will express himself. It's not a preference when you're hyper-present. It's not a desire when you're hyper-present. Nick's just being Nick. Philip's expressing Philip. If you are in separation, i.e. time, i.e. what can be extended eventually is suffering, like I don't have suffering. I don't have that car. I want a truck like Phil's. I would love that life like Phil's. I would love to travel and get any place I want like Phil's. I want it. That's scarcity. That's time. That's saying that you don't have it in this now moment. Now, while that may be true, but the scarcity energy is not going to make you get it. That anxiety, the biochemical, alchemical processes in your body won't keep you mindful and focused and in power enough to go live your purpose and build that business and go do it. Again, you don't manifest it. You are then, if you just embody your body and learn to be hyper-present, the traumas dissolve because you have no time in time, like in the practice, and you are just you. And imagine taking away, I'll just say a majority for labeling's sake, of the trauma ripple in your body that made you take that job at a bank that you freaking hate and you don't want to do, or made you marry that husband that you're like, oh, I just really don't love him. That's not really what I wanted. Because someone, your mom told you that you needed that kind of guy. And all of these trauma ripples and conditions that have created a life of unfulfillment because you haven't really been you outside of the trauma. You dissolve the trauma by being hyper-present. You dissolve those ripples. You will not want anything. You will just be you. Imagine that as a diagram. Like you will be you, less ripple of trauma, I'll say less. You magnetize that frequency in your heart that is whole. And what do you think that magnetizes? You magnetize your freaking ideal life. You just Nick with like a beaming heart and you're like, I'm going to research everything in the universe and explain this in the most simplest way for everyone to understand. And I could see how excited Nick is. And I love watching your shit, Nick. And I'm like, that guy's on purpose. He's freaking loving this shit. It's like, that's it. And as you work to continue, because we all have it. I have mine. The ripples of trauma, patterns, conditioning, and the more present you are, then your whole heart, Nick, well, who else could do what you do, frankly? I don't know many people. Like, it's like, Nick's Nick. That's your purpose. You don't even focus on doing anything else, because if we even dissect you, we don't need to do it on this call, we can do it offline. If we dissect and dive in you into a theta delta, and then you start talking to me about your dad or your mom and your conditioning, I guarantee the pattern of all of it that you probably already know would have made you this universal researcher who's freaking deep into the codes and embodied in it. The code's there. You can't help but be you. You're not going to be a car salesman right now. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's,
I
like,
don't know, man.
This is you.
I like trucks. I could be a car salesman.
True. I actually want to shop too. And I was fixing my last Jeep and dismantling the suspension on a Brooklyn street. And people were like, what the frick?
But yeah, I'm into trucks. I like trucks. I mean, I've been into cars and I was raised in that. You know, my brother is a couple years older than me, and we were playing games on like PS4 and PS3 and PS2, just Xbox, just playing car games. I remember we used to play NASCAR, and I don't even like NASCAR, but we used to play NASCAR going backwards on the track and just ram each other, and you know, Fast and Furious games. And I'm into, so, you know, I could sell some cars, but it's just, I feel like there's more value in, And you know, that brings up a question for me. Do you think purpose is something that is ultimately decided before we come, or do you think purpose is something that we have in each moment and it's a fluid thing? You know, because purpose is an interesting one, because then it kind of brings up this question of, is there free will, or is there destiny? Because if you're saying, you know, there's a whole bunch of people in the spiritual community that say, we are star seeds and we got to came here to do this, and that's what my purpose is. And so I feel like that they're saying that it was my destiny to do that. In some sense, but there might be some free will. You could do it. You could not do it. What's your thoughts on purpose and how that works?
Whoa, this could go on for like chapters. I have a diagram coming out, you know, like my Quantum Leap sketches. I have one that I've done already on Destiny that's going to come out later, like in a couple of weeks or something. It's all of it, frankly. Let's take out the Starseed thing just for a second to understand, because I like to start with the human, where we are and what is known.
Yeah.
And everything else is, it can be true for sure. I can align with some of those things myself, but that's not the point. The point is it true for yourself, for anyone even listening to this, or not? I like people to take out stories. Stories can be a distraction to your power.
Especially past stories.
Past stories, stories from English and 1500 years ago, and you're trying to dissect the codes in that, good luck. Or even the Emerald Tablets.
I'm literally doing that right now.
Yeah, but it's like early American right English. Good luck. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I have it too in my bag, like right here. It's like literally like, where is it?
I'm going to show you the book that I've been reading.
Yeah, here it is. Look, right there. Bingo.
Oh, I got to plug myself back in here. 1 second. There we go. Okay. This is what I've been into. The Emerald Tablets, the book. It's just like a small book that was translated. Yeah. Actually, Robert Grant recommended this.
Yeah.
And trying to understand that. It's written in today's language, but the words that they use.
Yeah.
That's the same book, just a different cover.
Yeah, it's a different cover. Same thing.
Yeah.
It's, that's the problem with this stuff. Again, unless you're people like us that find we could dissect it, but you don't even need to. You dive into a gamma, theta, delta, you'll freaking download all the codes. Like, I've met Metatron, the angel Metatron. That was one of my experiences. I've met Seshat, one of the scripts and gods of Egypt, like in another dimension where I placed my hand on a black sphere in 2015 and downloaded the codes. And that's the day my Instagram changed, because I used to work in fashion in New York City for like Condé Nast and all these magazines and stuff and branding. And that was the day I moved from that. And then my friends were like, what the fuck are you on, Phil? Sorry. What are you doing? Like, what are you on? Why are you sharing this kind of stuff? I'm like, no, man, this is truth. And it's like, anyways, to get back to your question on purpose and free will and destiny, I look at everything, and I know you talk about this too. I look at everything like an algorithm. It's all pattern. Because when you work with people, like I do, and you work with thousands of people, thousands of sessions, you see pattern in behaviors. You see pattern linked to emotional conditioning. You see pattern based on their childhood and DNA and how their father was and how their mother was. And I could look at someone and be like, oh my God, I know you. Like, it's weird. I could look at someone at a coffee shop. I'm like, oh, there's something there from your mother about blah, blah, blah. And when you see the patterns in everything, your purpose is a culmination of those ancestral patterns. That's you. My mom, Filipino, kind, loving mom, hardworking, single mother. I get my like grit and hardworking temperament from her, but she's a very kind, beautiful heart, that Filipino culture. My dad, Arab, Iraqi, like very expressive, very kind of dominating as well. I get that part of him too. My dad's family, very entrepreneurial. A lot of them are very successful entrepreneurs, like very successful. And so I get that entrepreneurial drive DNA from them. A lot of them are artists and philosophers. My dad was a philosopher, and he wrote many books when he was younger before he activated his schizophrenia. I get that from him. I can't be anything other than who I am. That's my purpose. When you can settle into the rhythm, vibration, polarity, and combination of all that intelligence, your patterns of you, that's who you are. Then yes, in a now moment, you can shift a bit. I look at destiny, you'll see in the diagram I have coming out in a couple of weeks, as like a little pie chart, a little two, like an angle. Your destiny is a culmination of that DNA patterning. You can be like this to the left and this to the right, if anyone's looking at the video, like a little V shape. You can go in the middle, a little bit here, a little bit here. That's the free will and your choices. If you're going like, let's say with me, I had a lot of trauma conditioning patterns from that violent childhood, frankly. So then I went some other ways. I was insecure. I didn't know my identity because I didn't have a father. That's linked to not having a father. I was also grew up Muslim, Roman Catholic. That confused the hell out of me. Identity, wanted to be popular. I was interested in psychology naturally, but I also wanted an identity. So I was naturally gifted as an artist. That comes from my father's side as well. And then I went into design and fashion instead of psychology. That was the fork in the road, high school. And I did that because I wanted to be popular, insecurity from trauma. And then I built a 20-year career in fashion with like Vogue, Condé Nast, Swarovski, all these brands, built a very successful career, made the money, did the things, did the shoots, did all the blah, blah, blah. But I fucking hated it. I was like depressed. I was successful, had money, had the things, had the clothing. I was unhappy. I was 40, 50 pounds overweight. I was drinking a bottle of whiskey by myself at least every 5 days, you know, in the West Village or the fancy apartment. I was bloated. I was angry. And then eventually I got Graves' disease. And then I healed myself, long story short, free will, chose another path. What did I cycle back to? Coaching, healing, psychology. The patterns are there. So your destiny is a chart. It's like a little V where you could go one way or the other. Your free will can only happen in a now moment. When you're untethered from the ripple, in a now moment, you have a choice. But it's only in that moment. Anything else is driven by conditioning, which is why even in the research, like over 95, 96% of your brain is run on the subconscious patterns, not unconscious choices. The more you tap into these cosmic truths, the more choices you actually have. And then you realize, and here's the trippy part, at a state of being, you have no choice. I'm just being. There's no choice anymore. It's like the Ouroboros in its tail.
Yeah. So I'm thinking actually back to what you said earlier about desire. And I'm thinking about, I've talked about this a lot in this podcast and Dr. David Hawkins and his levels of consciousness work. And I'm thinking about the different levels. For those that don't know, I think there's 16 levels.
And enlightenment at 1,000 and yeah.
Yeah, it's, what are the levels? I'm just going to name them so people can understand if they haven't seen them. It's shame. This is bottom to top. Shame, guilt, hopelessness. Shame, guilt, hopelessness, grief, then fear. I haven't said them in a while. So then it's fear, then desire, then it's anger, frustration. I think that's what it is. And then after that, it's pride. And then you get into the archetypical 4D, or you get past the ego into truth is what he calls it. Everything below that is falsehood. Then there's courage, neutrality, willingness, acceptance, logic, love, these frequencies. And so when I hear you talk about desire in that way, what I think you're getting at is, I think you are playing a little bit of semantics, but I think it can be useful because when people understand the difference, it's helpful. Now, what that means is that desire, in the frequency of desire, basically is exactly what you're saying. It's the low level. I think a lot of law of attraction is taught in the theme of desire, but it does get you out of the lower level below it, fear. If you're stuck in fear, and if you're like, I'm scared of what's going to happen, everything could go wrong, then if you get into desire, law of attraction on that surface level, then it's well, what if it goes right? And then you start to focus on, okay, maybe if I start to think differently, and you're kind of there, but that's not the whole thing. And what you're saying is you're talking from a much higher level of consciousness. You could interpret that as neutrality, or you could interpret that all the way as acceptance, which is pretty high. It's just below logic. So if you're in a state of acceptance, which I feel like is kind of what you're saying, you're just like, I accept everything that comes to me, but you still are magnetized because you're accepting life as it is and you're not resisting anything. So then let's say if you do have a preference of, I want to build a camper, it happens instantly. Maybe you put it out there at some point. Maybe you don't even think about it. Maybe it's just a natural byproduct of, like you're saying, of embodiment. And maybe you don't have to actually think of it. You know, there's different ways to interpret that. But essentially what you're saying is that you don't need to desire to have it. If you're in a state of completion already, in wholeness already, it actually will come from within. Because I think that's another point that you made is that we think that it's outside of us.
That's a good way to put it.
We need to bring it to us. But it's like it's already here within us. If we look at the holographic universe, Michael Talbot, if the whole universe is hologram, then that means that the entire hologram is within you. And so if you're tapped into that, if you're in that wholeness state, you would, in a sense, manifest it from energy into physical reality from within you. And that's mm-hmm. what you're saying to me. It's like you're embodying that acceptance. And that is, as you said before, a higher frequency. So it comes into this world, you could say, from you, but we don't even know if we can separate this. The last point I want to make, because I want to hear your thoughts on this. But we don't know if we can separate what we think we desire from maybe that's the desire of the eternal creation itself, or of, you said, the all. Maybe mm-hmm. the all or the creator wants us to bring this in, or wants you us to desire this. You know, mm-hmm. so it's like people think, well, this, why would we want things? We don't want things, or wanting things is bad because, you know, the God already has a plan. Maybe God has a plan through you. There's an old analogy about that, about the person on the side of the street who's mm-hmm. like, do you save the person or do you not save the person? Is it God's will to save the person or is it not? I don't remember it exactly, so I'm not going to quote it.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying is, that's how I feel like it fits all together, you know?
No, that's great. Totally. It is within you. It's, again, if we're talking about the difference between, again, making this black and white, but it's a spectrum. That's why language is hard, between the concept and reality of oneness and the concept and reality of separation. In separation, I need to desire something. That guy has that car. I really want that car, man. I don't have that car. I don't have his career. I don't have that money. How do I go get that? And that's full of scarcity, lack, which frankly just builds more anxiety. It doesn't make you build a fulfilling life. And you know what? You can go work and get it in the 3D. You can go ahead, go work, go get it, go get burned out, get that job, save that money, make the hundreds of thousands or millions, and you'll go do it like my clients, quite frankly. Some of them are millionaires, multimillionaires, billionaires, depressed as fuck. It's like, and then they're depressed. They're not happy. They got the things. That's the whole point. Did they get it? Yeah, they went and got it, but they went and got it because they think they needed it. They think they needed something outside of them to fulfill them inside. And then what happens with humanity? We accumulate too much shit. We cover the earth in concrete. We build too many buildings. We destroy too many forests. We're too disconnected from each other, ourselves, and the earth. And we make too many cars, too many lithium batteries, too many yeah. solar panels, even too many everything. And then now what? We need to go populate Mars? Like, it's like, this is the problem with over-wanting, over-desire. When we talk about the concepts that have been misunderstood, again, because you're trying to read 2,000-year-old texts written over 1,500 years as a compilation of essays from different people, and the women were even edited out of it. Let's talk about that another day in the Bible. Like, where are the women?
Yeah.
Like, they wrote too. They were mm-hmm. taken out. Like, that's a whole freaking thing. The truth is, the real concept is, when you are embodied in who you are, you will obtain everything you want.
How do we know who we are?
Exactly. Outside of the ripple of the trauma conditioning, because it's the trauma ripple, the subconscious conditioning, which is why I talk about subconscious alchemy, that is programming you to think like, Philip, you really want to be popular because you don't have an identity, because you're this brown kid in a school with a bunch of Europeans, and you're like thinking, okay, I'm an artist, I want to be popular, people like me when I draw and I wear good clothing, or I'm not popular, that person's popular, they're wearing nice clothing, let me go buy some nice clothing, I'm popular, I have a girlfriend now, I take my glasses off, I wear contacts, I'm happy. And then I build an 18-year career in fashion, being unhappy.
Like, you know, it's been, like, there.
We all have our own codes, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And when you see that clearly in yourself and can recognize that this is what they mean by the universe is abundant, you will. It's not that you will not want or have, again, semantics. You will want, you will desire, but they will be natural. They won't be greedy.
You'll be fulfilled. For sure.
Doing things that you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we've been trying to figure out for thousands of years as humans. What is the divine desire versus the ego desire? I think that's basically the gist of what you're saying. Yeah. Because if mm-hmm. we can understand, you can even call it trauma desire from how we're wording this. You know, that's if we can distinguish between the trauma desires of, I want this nice house because I want people to perceive me as this so that I feel good. Whatever it is, there's millions of different patterns of basically insecurity. And so mm-hmm. if we become secure within our own being, then we might be able to hear, you know, this is the theme of willingness, essentially. We might be able to hear that higher calling, but it's not only beneficial for humanity, but for us at the same time. So it's like you couldn't have heard that until you let go. And so what you're saying is that you've got to let go of the desires that are not pure desires, in a sense. I wouldn't say that they're all pure, like pure as in completely pure, but they're closer to me, what I could call truth or relative to truth. And I see truth as life-giving. So what you're doing is life-giving. So it's in truth, as in like you're helping people. You're helping people to discover their power. And so that in itself is life-giving. And so I think just as a byproduct of that, it's kind of like I made a video the other day about how karma is really close to manifestation. It's just said in a different way.
Cause and effect.
There is some, and right. That's what I was going to say. If you look at these books, there's cause and effect. And so when you start changing, you know, I guess what I'm going to ask you here as an overall question, is there an organizing principle that you can affect what comes to you non-physically into physicality? Can you take with your being? I think that's the essence of, to me, manifestation or attraction. Mm-hmm. It's like, can we do that? I guess that would be the surface level. Do you think that we can do that?
Yeah. That's what that is the thing. That's what manifestation has been trying to get at. That's what law of attraction has been, frankly, trying to get at. You have to understand, you also have to understand language is really, the reason I talk about language and words a lot, and I enjoy the semantics, because the play of it is actually the frequency of the word. That is the vibration. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, if you start to dissect 19th century English and then you're trying to make it into reality, you have to understand a lot of the law of attraction principles up until now, you know, a new age where people are writing new things like me and you, and we're kind of dissecting to make a new language. So we could say now we're beginning a new era, but everything before now was from the thought leadership of the 19th and 20th century. Men, patriarchy, it was all about the mind back then. Even the way they looked at life, mentalism, thinking it was only the brain. So we have to look at the way these principles were written, who wrote them, when they wrote them, the language of how they wrote them, and we have to understand what's the universal principle outside of the language. Then you get to the truth. If you only pay attention to the language and the way you're literally reading it, you will misinterpret it, because it's not just in the mind, as Nick pointed out and I point out, it's mind, feelings, and embodiment and being. And that's how sometimes it's misinterpreted. Why are we talking about algorithms now? Universe, the game. I talk about the algorithm of God. Do you know what I mean? I have another Instagram handle for that. It's like, why do we talk in this language now of intelligence? Because we're in a digital age. We're talking about the same shit the Bible's been talking about. It's just literally 2022. Fast forward now 1,000 years, who the hell knows what they're going to be talking about and what the language is? It's frankly the same. Like Joe Dispenza, you, me, teaching all this. It's the same. It's just a different language at a different time. Surrender your will to God and you will be provided for. Someone like me now will be like, let go of your body and breath. You will dive into the purity of who you are outside of your trauma patterns, and you will magnetize your natural desires. Same thing. Same exact thing. So if you're saying, how can we do that? Can we do that? You are a biochemical, biological, bioelectromagnetic being. Literally, your biofield energy emanates from your heart. When I guide my clients into deep delta or gamma meditation, their gamma, your heart is beaming, dude. You don't even feel anything. Like, all you feel is love. The first time I tapped into that level of gamma, I didn't even exist. There was no eye. I didn't have any hands. There was no universe. It was one. I'm not kidding. You kinesthetically are embedded in it. And all you feel is overwhelming love. And it was almost too much. I had to tap out. I was crying. I'm not kidding. Because I was like, I'm so traumatized as a human. That is too much love for me. I cannot accept that much love from God. Because you're feeling it. You're tapped into it. And the more you tap into these states and being, and even on a daily basis, it doesn't have to be a gamma, just an alpha, just being present, your heart is already magnetic. It is emanating a biofield and shooting a frequency out from you And if your core pattern means that you really want to open a flower shop and you didn't because your mom just was like, no, be a dentist, then that pattern will repeat, will come out from you, and the universe will literally mirror it back. And then you will be presented experiences and opportunities to open up that flower shop or learn how, or, oh, here's a course on how to work with flowers and get them from Holland. I don't know, whatever, on the internet. You know, like, oh, that just coincidentally showed up. You know, it's like, yeah. No, you manifested it. It was a mirror for you. I had no place to stay today. I don't worry. I had one gap between the Airbnbs, one day. I have a camper truck. I can go anywhere. I can get a hotel. Money's not an issue. It's no big deal. Still, I was like, I'm just not going to book. Something's going to happen. Manager DMs me last night. He's like, hey, the place you were going to book, they moved out early. It's ready the day before. You can move in tomorrow. Done. Done. No big deal. Every place I've ever wanted on this 1¾ year journey has been presented to me. I'm never worried. Now, this is different than you were talking about acceptance. There's a different level of acceptance that can still be pulled from trauma where I'm just like, I'm accepting what everyone and everything's given to me, but I'm not really charging my heart with my own will, with my own energetic like balance. I'm not filling my cup to recognize, is this still me letting go too much and to the point where I'm not even discerning what is a true desire naturally or my mother imposing on me? So there's a distinction to make there for people. Again, the closer in proximity you get to your body and breath, the more you make those distinctions in the now, where it's like, oh, that's not an insecure desire. That's actually something I really want to do. Nick, I get invitations to podcasts all the time. Most of the time I'm like, nah, I don't really feel it. Nick calls out, I'm like, yeah, man, let's do it. That's it. You reached out the weeks after I felt more embodied after my own, I closed down my Instagram, frankly, 2 months ago, if you look back. My team and I, we deleted a whole 2 years. We archived 2 years worth of content because I'm like, I don't feel like that fill anymore. I shut down all my programs. I went into ceremony for 2 months, a month and a half, intentionally. Had like maybe 2 private clients, that's it. Closed every program. I didn't make any money. I didn't care. I wanted to feel what a new embodiment was. Meditated every day for hours. This new fill emerged. You can look back on my feed. And then 3-4 weeks later, Nick reaches out. And my content's on fire, 10,000 new followers in like 3-4 weeks now, and everyone's buying my meditation album. I'm not worried. I'm embodied. Take the time to be with yourself, and you will magnetize again, it's a dangerous word, but purer ripple than the ones with your traumas.
Fascinating. two questions for you. 2 more questions.
I want to talk to you about your patterns too. Maybe another podcast.
Sure. Yeah, we can do that. We can do that. Now, with the game of the universe, it might be a game, might not. Mm-hmm. People call it a play. People call it a movie. You know, there's different interpretations. Do you see any game aspects of reality? And if so, how would you see how the universe works as a game?
Again, it's the beautiful thing when we understand language of the time. We're talking about as an interpretation of a game because we live in a digital video game age, right?
Everything 100%. That's why that's named it. Artificial
intelligence. Yeah. Exactly. If this was years ago, let's compare it to talking about heaven as this patriarchal place when everything was written in those times from monarchies. Even the church was designed, the pews and the fact that everything with the priest is higher in the front, that's literally taken from a king's court. They're designed in monarchies, and then they thought that the ultimate person of the universe is a bearded man in heaven in the skies, because in the sky is something that was unattainable for them. They're on the ground. They couldn't fly. They're like, that's up there. That must be heaven. We're now looking at it as a digital quantum thing, because now we have quantum technology. We have digital games. So looking at it now as a video game, yeah, video games are pixels. You talk about this all the time. It's a projection of light. I am nothing. We are nothing. If you look at your hands, atomically, 99.9999% of you isn't even, there's nothing there. It's just energetic vibration moving at different frequencies and polarities and densities that create the perception that these two fingers are touching, that I'm knocking on this wood table, that I'm petting my dog's fur, but it's all vibration. Nothing is even touching. It's just vibration. When you can really tap into the truth of that, that you are a light, projecting light, emanating light, capturing light in your eyes and your brain, you're literally a projector and a screen wrapped into a three-dimensional hologram. You're nothing but a person in a game. And who's controlling you? Your emotions and conditioning, your choices? Based on what Nick and I are talking about today, a majority of it is subconscious patterns that have been dictated from your great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather and by the patterns of society that you are bound to. Me growing up in an insecure 80s and 90s society looking at fashion magazines. I'm making it really simple, but hopefully people can pick up what I'm putting down. Like the insecurities I got as a child from 80s MTV, from 90s fashion magazines that were big back then, and Fader magazine and music. And needing to look like someone, that I went into a fashion image, wanting to fulfill something inside of me. Can everyone see the pattern in all of that? And how that pattern, God's will, God's plan, if it was hundreds and thousands of years ago, we said plan. Now we say algorithm, God's algorithm. It's a pattern. The mathematics, the geometry of it all even. It's coding, which is what Nick's kind of getting to. It's coding. Now, I'm not going to go so far as to say a person or someone, some entity is coding it.
That's my next question. You said God's plan. I got to know who or what God is.
Who's God? It's like, as far as I'm concerned, in this human body, in this expression, what we call God is the coding. That is like, I guess you can call it the coding spirit, the Holy Spirit, right? God is the coder, the engineer, the architect. Even the Matrix went on about that. The Matrix had the architect and the oracle, the feminine and the masculine, another two principles in the Kabbalah and the seven laws. At the end of the Matrix, you realize they were in cahoots going like, well, we create the universe. Ha ha, the joke's on everyone. It's all part of it. It's all part of it. It's all a game. You need light. You need dark. Frankly, you need trauma patterns. You can't dissolve them completely. My trauma patterns of insecurity are not insecure now. They're optimized, but they still want me to be seen, which is why I'm still talking about this shit. Otherwise, I'd be in a forest just bathing in beingness. Do you feel me? Nick still wants
sometimes.
To be seen. Yeah, we're both there. You and I both. We'll probably both hang and do that. It's like, but like Nick and I both want to share our knowledge and wisdom with the world. Part of that, let's label it as a negative sense when we were kids, was maybe an insecurity. Now that we're in our power, it's just we're optimizing our algorithm. Now we're like, no, this is us. And when that dissolves, when that pattern dies down, then we'll evolve into another evolution of us. But it's all coding. That's what the video game, the perception of how this is a game. And when you upgrade yourself, when you find a new code, your life gets better. You get like a bag of gold. Do you know what I mean? Like Mary Brothers, you find like, when you find a code in a book or you embody that breath and you tap into it, my brain gets literally new cells. My body heals. My eyes heal. My body becomes stronger. My perception becomes stronger. I'm more happy. I get more money in the bank because people pay me more, and we're exchanging. Mm-hmm. It's all a video game. I'm getting gifts every day, blessing after blessing.
And there it is, folks. I actually had more questions.
Who's the coder? What else? I love it.
It's a hard question to answer. That's like the hardest question to answer, in my opinion, is. Because the creator and God and that type of thing. So, you know, I get it. It's tough because it's really, is it one thing? Is it everything? Is it nothing in this paradox of a universe we live in? You know, and so actually another question that came up to me while you were talking was, you're saying it's based on your ancestry a lot. What do you think about the soul and the soul lessons and our patterns based on soul experiences comparative to ancestral, because we have a whole part of the spiritual community, such as Dolores Cannon, Dr. Michael Newton, who talk about basically your patterns are not only ancestral, but a lot of the times they're more along the lines of what you as a soul have done. What do you need to learn? These concepts. So what are your thoughts on that?
That's a very good question. I look at everything in my experience, kinesthetically, and I'm going to say this because it's like, I feel everything truly is one. So there's no separation. I've taken out all the stories of my experience. Do we have souls? If we're going to dive into separation and energy, because obviously this computer is separate from me, then yes. When this material Philip sack of a carbon body dissolves back into sand, then the energy life force that animated it still exists. It is a life force. It is one with life force. It's like you and I are fingers of life force, and we're just have little finger puppets, and we just put a new sock on, you know, like here's a new skin. Sure. Yes, we have souls that then have their own energy and programming based on their little fractal experiences. Even if you get into the quantum, it's all fractal geometric patterns.
Yeah.
Your tribe, if whoever's not familiar, look up fractal patterns. You'll see branches that are part of the same tree of fractal. You could say Nick and our community and myself are part of the same fractal, right? And then you're facing the polarity of another fractal outside of you. That those could be the other people that are teaching you lessons. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm getting really meta here. I don't know. Hope people are following. But it's like you dive into the fractal nature of this universe, then yes, there's all this energy that is an extension of one, all connected, but not separate. Envision that. Like, do we have souls? No. It's all one. That's what I'm trying to say. If we then zoom out or zoom in, could we say we have souls? Yes, because it's an extension, but it's still connected. So is it separate? And we're saying it's connected not by concept. When you dive into these meditations, practices, into these truths, you can feel the connection to the other human. You can feel the connection to the universe. Like you actually are like, oh man, yeah. When you're in that gamma state, like I said, if anyone wants a free try, like what I guide my clients to, I actually scripted it out on my Instagram. It's pinned at the top. Go try it. Keep surrendering. People DM me, they're like, I don't know how to feel yet. Keep surrendering. I don't feel yet. Keep going. It's surrender. When you do that, you feel the oneness. There's no soul. It's an expression. And in this moment, I'm expressing. I know that can sound really meta for some people, but here's the problem with illusion. Illusion can just cause more separation in the experience that anyone's happening right now. So again, it's like, it's duality and non-duality. Which one is it? It's both. Like there's no, because right now I feel this glass and I'm tasting the orange juice, but I can dive into a meditation and be like, oh my God, there's nothing but one. Which one is it?
It's a paradox.
And then the paradox is the truth.
You know, that question or that contemplation rather of, is there a soul or not? Is the essence of the difference between Hinduism and Buddhism? In a sense, because Buddhism says there's no self, and that there's these five aggregates, I think they call them, and they're the senses and the perceptions. That's what moves on, but there is no separate self. And Hinduism says more that there's this Brahman, but it says it in a different way, that the Brahman is just the different faces of the creator, and the creator is within everything. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of two kind of interpretations. I think it's kind of semantics.
It could be the same. It's the same. The creators and everything. The creators in this phone. The creators in this book. The creators in this glass. Creators in Nick's hair. Creators in my hair. But then in Buddhism, they're like, well, it's just there is no self. Yeah, because the all is all. That's why the all is, that's taken from Hermeticism in 19th century English. I prefer that description of it myself because there's no in, there's no out, there's everything.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. And when you encase in that, when you really recognize that truth, then it's all. Like it's everything. It's everything. It's separate and connected, which means that I could fluidly dive in and out of it when there is no in and out, meaning I'm living one experience. That's when you're living in one and I'm living in more wholeness. Let's see how this practically applies to your life, because that's what I also like to do. How does this practically apply to your life? Like we could wax poetic and masturbate on the shit all day, quite frankly, but how does it practically apply to our life? it applies to our life, because when we're truly embodied as one, I feel my brother and sister down the street. I can feel
that train.
I feel the train. That's, yeah, this room sucks. I can feel the echo in this room. You know, oh, the other room is actually better. Too bad. But it's like, I can feel myself. I can feel Nick's heart. I can feel my patterns. I can feel Nick's patterns. I can feel other people's patterns. I can feel how I need to act. What would be best in this moment? What would create a more joyful moment for myself and others around me? And then we start to live in more unison because we're actually connected. We don't cover the earth with concrete again. We don't buy too much or create too much. We create just enough in fulfillment and beauty because we're connected. We've been living in separation, quote unquote, what's been called sin, which just meant misstep in Aramaic. We've been living in sin or separation for too long, which is why most people are suffering. And which is why everyone's saying, well, get close to God and you will heal your life. Yes, but now we need new language with Nick and I and other people to be like not as triggered by the word. To explain it in ways that are understandable.
Yeah, that's why the Buddha didn't use the word God. I think he, from my understanding, he specifically didn't use the word God because people had too many preconceptions about the word God. Yeah. And also, something else I thought of was that in Hinduism, there's another distinction I want to make. I think in Hinduism, they say that the soul is permanent or it's immortal or permanent immortal. I think those are kind of semantics too, but they're saying that the soul continues on and does it ever go back into the all? I think Buddhism kind of hints at that more, but it, when you talk about the release of the cycle of life and death in Buddhism, they don't really tell you what comes after. I mean, they say you can go to the 31 different planes of existence, but they, if you ask them what self-realization is, I think they just say it's like a blowing out of a candle. So it's like, well, what does that feel like? Well, it's like, well, you can't describe it, just like you're saying. A lot of the words, you said that earlier, a lot of the words, we can't really, you can't really put it down into something that is tangible because it's not, it's unlimited. You can't limit the unlimited. And I think that's kind of what we're getting at here, is that we can try and
say this. Which is why there's nothing to go back to. That if we can really understand that, is there anything to go back to when you are it?
Space.
But sense. Really think about that. Like, if we are one with the creator, and we can breathe that truth in, if there's nothing to go back into, it already is. It is the experience. There's nothing separate. We could go into the fractal and zoom in and zoom in and zoom in and then see a bunch of different separate fractals of like essentially humans, experiences, birds, bees, and other planets and universes, sure. But the essence of the soul and the energy within it is already tethered to the one. It's tethered. It's connected, which means it's not going into anything. It literally is just like me reaching out my hand, but meanwhile, everything's inside of it already. It is. Which is why it gets too abstract for people. They're like, how the hell do we describe this? It's just a bunch of bull. And then at a certain point, it's like, well, what's the point?
How I see that is, I see infinity or the all or God or the creator as space, literally as space itself. We know from the physics that are coming out from Nassim Haramein and these other physicists who are really getting in there that space is not empty. Space is actually full of energy, but it's in a way that we can't or haven't been able to measure before. And so I see it as, what is there, like you're asking the question, what is there to go into? It would be not a going into because you're already in it, but you're actually just moving through different bodies of awareness. You know, that's what the Law of One talks about. I haven't talked about Law of One. I think this is the first podcast I haven't mentioned the Law of One at all, which is actually progress because I talk about it way too much. So, you know, that's where I started to get that concept from, but it's also in the seven sacred bodies, the gene keys, Corpus Christi, the rainbow body. And I think rainbow body actually is a good way to describe it. It's like each body is a different color of the rainbow. And so if you're outside of a body, you are in the all, but the all is already here. Mm-hmm. It's already present. And the all is already within you because we know that, like what you said, there's a bunch of space everywhere. You know, it permeates everything. That's why again, the Force in Star Wars, I talk about that a lot. The Force, the concept of the Force is in itself what I really am nailing down, that this probably is pretty close, that there is just a force, and we can call it electromagnetic force, call it whatever we want, but that is what I think lies at the heart of everything. So, you know, you were talking about earlier, here's my last question for you. You were talking about earlier, if I didn't want to, you know, do this, I'd just be in nature, just getting it right. So let's say that you actually did decide, you know what, I'm just going to go into nature and I'm just going to get it for the rest of my life. And I'm just going to relax in nature. I'm going to create this and I'm going to not be on social media ever again. I'm not going to talk to any humans ever again. And you did so because that's just what you felt like you were going to do. So if that was the case, if you had one last thing to tell humanity, it could be a paragraph, it could be a thesis, it could be one sentence, it could be a quote, it could be really anything you'd like. What would be something that you feel like you would want to let the world know, or just tell anyone, people in general, about anything, really? I know it's kind of open-ended, but if there's one last thing you could say.
Let's talk about trucks. No, kidding.
I'd be down.
We could talk about that another day. I could use a new battery system, but here's what I would say. All of these codes, everything that we're talking about, from the Book of One, Ra, I have a deep connection to Ra. In my journeys, I've connected to that energy of Ra, the consciousness, and brought it back down. I'm like, I am Ra, and as a part of the collective consciousness. So I feel like I have a direct connection myself with the collective. All of it can be felt, experienced, understood, embodied when you truly just lay down. Here's the best code I have for this, is it. Like, you want the portal? Lay down on your bed. Eyes closed, hands by your side so there's no tension. Long, slow, deep breaths in and out through the nose to slow the brainwaves. Loosen your jaw, relax your tongue to any natural position, and literally surrender your body and breath into infinity. If you think you're done, keep going. If you feel some tension, surrender again. If a thought comes up, it's merely just a flag for you to remember, surrender again. Invite it all in. Keep surrendering, keep letting go, and you will kinesthetically feel God's love, what we define as it. You will kinesthetically feel the truth of this oneness, and you will fill your body with that love. And that will teach you more than any of these books or any shit that's coming out of my mouth or Nick's mouth right now. You will witness it for yourself, where no one can take it away from you. That truly, surrender your will to God. Surrender your body and breath to life force within you. And blessing after blessing, you will magnetize to you. You will be present to it. You will have to learn to listen. What is a trauma pattern? What is a subconscious conditioning? What feels like it's coming from more purity or honesty? And then it's just an art of listening. And that is how I would define everything. You do that, you'll download your own book of seven universal laws. You will download your own codes. You will access raw consciousness, frankly. You will access, like I did, Christ consciousness, like Jesus, Christ consciousness came to me and I was like, whoa. Like, you will access Metatron's cube. You will see it all for yourself. Because you are it. We all know we are it. We all talk about it. We all feel the truth of that. You dive into this breath and feel your breath fold into, how I describe it is it's folding into the one with the creator. Like, it's just folding into the breath where you don't even have a breath anymore. The way my clients have described it, it's like, I'm not breathing. Something is breathing for me. Dive into that state. You'll come out with your own Emerald Tablet book, I guarantee you.
There it is, folks. Have fun. See you on the other side. But thanks for coming on.
DM me. Let me know how that goes.
Right. I'll be here. But thanks for coming on Universe of Games today, man. What do you got going on? Where can people find you?
Instagram, Philip Attar, PHILIPATTAR. These, you know, guided meditations can be found on my, you know, on my Instagram and my links to guide you. I'll tell people there was a caveat. While obviously I appreciate the business and people diving into meditations, even in the instructions, I tell you to stop listening to them after a while, to recognize the cadence I'm guiding you into and then do it on your own. Because that's actually when you go deeper. I'm just there to kind of be the booster rocket to get you into space. And then afterwards, you're on in space on your own for an hour. Go for it. You'll go deeper than anyone could guide you. So blessings to everyone. And we'll continue the conversation. Nick, I want to talk to you about your stuff next time. We should just do that, too.
If you want to get into it, we can do it, man.
I want to hear about your codes.
All right. We'll come back. That's a little teaser trailer for the next episode of Universe Game. If you're not subscribed, subscribe. Or think about it. At least contemplate it. And go ahead and follow Phil. All of Phil's stuff will be in the description. And you can find it there, tap it there, and find him. Otherwise, thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next episode. And until then, peace. All right, thanks for listening here on Universe the Game. I really hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I did. And if you did enjoy it, consider subscribing if you're here on YouTube. And if you're on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, consider leaving a 5-star review as it really helps to support the podcast. Other than that, check out my book, 10 Secrets of Awakening. We talk about subconscious mind and much more in this book as well. So I would consider it supplemental to today's podcast. Other than that, we'll see you in the next podcast. Check out maybe some other podcasts that we want if you're getting into some binging right now. All right. See you on the next. Peace.